Good morning, ARBC at Bishan. It's good to see a lot of familiar faces today. And I just want to tell you, I miss you all a lot. So do remember to visit Adam, you know, okay? Well, thank you very much for giving me this opportunity and the privilege and the honor to share God's word with you today. This is a homecoming of sorts. Maybe not so much the chapel, but the school. I studied in a Presbyterian boys' school before it came, it became co-ed, and now it's known as Kuo Chuan Presbyterian. But somehow I think where we had our chapel back then was in Katong, and I think one group of people actually came to set up this place as well. So really it's a homecoming for me. And I bring you greetings from your brothers and sisters in Christ from Adam Road. So thank you, Angel, for leading us in songs, and Wee Ming for leading us in service, and Chris for leading us in prayer. What we have just read this morning from the first, from the first reading right up to the end of reading, actually we are covering the whole chapter of chapter 9 of John this morning, and it's not just the few verses that Wee Ming have just read, okay? Now, what does it take for us to see, really see ourselves as we are? Well, Singapore, where Singaporeans are known by many achievements, and thanks to our late Mr. Lee Kuan Yew's vision, passion, and determined commitment to build this fine city nation we call Singapore. Yet at the same time, we are also known for our most ignoble behavior, unique to and nowhere else seen in Singapore, or in the world, sorry. Would you be able to make a guess? I think besides being a fine city, the unique and ignoble characteristics of Singapore would be first light. I see whether you can guess it right or not. No, the other one. Yes, thank you so much. Okay, what do you call this? Kiasuism, right? Besides being a fine city, it's kiasuism. Actually, this one is new to me. And I just seen it last night. We got people choke place until the whole using a toilet roll. Now, something that we see ourselves not doing, right? I'm sure you all won't do, right? I hope. But what about this? Just now that one. Thank you. And now, if we are honest, there are quite a few of us who are guilty of this. We are experts at seeing faults in others, but not in ourselves. This is a classic case of seeing but still blind. A real classic case of missing the obvious for the other. And well, there's a need for us to understand that often we are blind to the obvious, although we are sighted people. From the passages we have read, we see similar patterns of blindness to the obvious. And it is important then to acknowledge our need to be healed or our blindness, even though we are sighted. Well, the context is that of the Feast of Tabernacles, right? Where Jesus was teaching and testifying to who he is. But often, he was responded with cynicism and attacked for his bold claim to be the divine. And as reported by John the author at the end of chapter 8, for making the divine claim, what did the Jews do? The Jews picked up stones to stone Jesus, but he hid himself, slipping away from the temple ground. So it was after leaving the temple ground while still in Jerusalem. And how do we know he's still in Jerusalem? Because the Pool of Siloam, which we have just read, is located in Jerusalem, that Jesus saw a man blind from birth, whom his disciples questioned. And there you see in the outline, the blind man healed, verses 12. And his disciples questioned, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Now, if you and I are stricken with blindness, or for that matter, any illness, prolonged illness, probably you will ask, what will we ask? Why me, God, right? Why me, God? But it is almost common for a Jew to ask who is to blame, whether it's parent or even their personal sin that results blind from birth. However, there is OT reference of parental sin passed on to children that is found in the first slide, the third slide, the Exodus, from Exodus 20, verse 5. You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sin of the fathers to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me. So God punishes a man's sins in succeeding generations. Whereas the next slide. For every living soul belongs to me, the Father as well as the Son. Both alike belong to me. The soul who sins is the one who will die. And in Psalm 51, surely I was sinful at birth, sinful from the time my mother conceived me. And so the Lord declares, the soul who sins is the one who will die. Now, and also in Psalms 51, it seems to suggest personal sin from birth, which might even suggest that we are all born sinners. And Jesus answers not to show cause, but actually to show the purpose of the man born blind by saying, neither this man nor his parents sin, but this happened so that the work of God might be displayed in his life, which we have read in verse 3. Now, it could be inferred generally then that Jesus would have held that blindness was due to the fallen nature of humanity and not caused directly by sin of either the man or his parents. Now, if this is true, there's much work to be done to reverse this situation, to reverse this condition. And no wonder Jesus mentions of the work he and his disciples are to do. And so what exactly does Jesus mean by we must do the work of him who sent me? Remember where this work was earlier mentioned? Let me help you jog your memory. Next slide. Then they ask him, what must we do to do the works God requires? Jesus answered, the work of God is this, to believe in the one he has sent. Now, only then does it make sense when Jesus says even in chapter 8, verse 12, and now here in verse 5, that I am the light of the world. This statement summarizes his work as opening people's spiritual eyes, which have been darkened by sin, so that they can see the wonderful grace of God and believed. The miracles, Jesus' teachings, his own testimonies about him being the divine, it gives humanity directions on whom to believe. Now, Jesus saw in this blind man an opportunity to emphasize this truth about his ministry once again. And it's a timely thing. We all need to be reminded, if not weekly, if not daily, weekly. Yet at the same time, it was a physical healing of the blind man as well. So there are two levels of understanding here, and they are not mutually exclusive. And my more academic colleagues will tell me this is a technical term for this is called double entendre. See, just to impress you a little bit. It just means double meanings, yeah, double meanings. But your investment in me is worthwhile a bit. Yeah? Now, if he was to show the world how to live and walk in the path of light, there was an urgent need for Jesus and his co-workers to carry on the task of bringing people to the light, as I am in the light. This is what is meant by we must do the work of him who sent me. And following, Jesus then proceeded to kapui, spit. Have you tried spitting and made paste out of mud? Not? It takes a lot of spittle, you know that? There's a lot of green fields. You try, it takes a lot of spittle just to make that paste, you know. How do I know? Don't ask me. And Jesus made some mud, put it on the man's eyes, and told him to go and wash in the pool of Siloam, to which the blind man obeyed, washed, and came back seeing. See, the pool of Siloam in Aramaic means sent. Jesus also confessed he's the sent one, as we see in verse 4. And so the sent one sent the blind man to a pool to wash. So it was not the pool of Siloam that healed the blind man, but the power of Jesus. You see that? So we moved on. We moved on to the blind man being questioned. First, his neighbors and those that have seen him blind and begging before, they ask, isn't this the same man who used to sit here? And some say, can I see Ire? Some say, is he Ire? And they are so divided amongst themselves. But the blind man who now have sight settled once and for all say, was he? Is that you, Brian? Brian used to wear a lot, his dark glasses, and sometimes I do think that perhaps he's blind, you know. But today he's not so. Yeah, you. Is that you, Brian? Now, to the question of how then were your eyes opened, the blind man replied with a detailed account of who? Who? Jesus. Jesus is the one. The man called Jesus, he, and how, who is Jesus? How? What happened is that Jesus put mud on my face, and what happened? He sent me to the pool of Siloam. I went there and washed, and I came back seeing. This man they call Jesus, he is the man. Unsatisfied with the blind man's answer, they, the neighbors and the people who have seen him, placed the blind man under citizen arrest and brought him to the Pharisees. Now, what do you think is wrong here? If you know your Bible well and you're well informed. If you catch a thief, who would you hand him to? Police. If someone who is sick, who you send him to? A doctor, no-brainer, right? Or medical professional, or even a hospital. See, at one time in my life, I like to get comfortably numb. What do I mean? I like to get comfortably numb by popping pills. It must have been God's mercy that I didn't overdose that day. I popped about 20 tablets of sedative. Then I was working as a health club instructor. What irony, right? Now I remembered I was at work, and the next I remembered I was lying in a room which smelled of frankincense. I kind of regained my conscience slightly, and there was mumbo-jumbo bumbling, you know, those. And I looked closer, and sitting near me was this so-called spiritual man, a bomo, and my family members. And I faintly heard him telling my mom that there's an evil spirit, and it must be exorcised from me. I felt something sharp, and when I reacted to the stabbing of my leg, the bomo said, hey, it was a spirit feeling the pain. He was telling my mom, no? Well, I was still reeling from the effects of the pills. And by the way, it was the third day. That means I comatose for 3 days before this incident happened. I was reeling from the effects of the pill, and so was not fully awake at the time. And the second time, the stab was even deeper. And this time, I woke up, and I told him that he was the one who needed to be exorcised, and I was restrained in time before I stabbed him and rid him of his evil spirit. But on a more serious note, I should be sent to a doctor, not a humbug religious man. Note in point, any bona fide Jews know that if a person is cured of an illness, of a malady, like a blindness, you bring him to see who? You bring him to see a priest. The priest is like our religious doctor to verify and confirm that this person is healed for full restoration back to community life. Instead, the healed man was brought to the Pharisees, and generally we know who are the Pharisees? They are the religious police. What an obvious shame, right? When there is a common enemy faced. So the Pharisees asked the same question as the people who had brought the blind man to them. For that matter, now he's a healed man. How had he received his sight? Verse 15, understanding that it happened on the Sabbath. And the blind man answered, Jesus put mud on my eyes, I wash, and now I see. And the Pharisees' contention by asking that was not for the blind or healed man, but Jesus, the one who made mud and healed on the Sabbath. For that would constitute Sabbath breaking. So they were divided in their judgment about Jesus. Some focused on the issue of observing the Sabbath, while others argued that Jesus was not from God because if he were, he would keep the Sabbath. Others, however, focused on the miracle and argued that the healing itself was a sign that Jesus was from God. God would not enable someone who was opposed to him to do such a miracle. And so after arguing for some time and still divided, they turned again to ask the blind man, to which he replied that Jesus was a prophet. And so, who is a prophet? A prophet was God's representative, one who delivered God's messages to others. The man was in agreement with those Pharisees who viewed Jesus as being from God. What Jesus had done was too wonderful to have been done by a sinner. But still unrelenting in wanting to discredit the claims of the blind man, hence discredit Jesus, even with a vague possibility of mistaken identity, the blind man's parents were summoned, and to the Pharisees' dismay, the healed man was confirmed to be who he was. But to the question as to who did the healing, the man's parents, fearful of being put out of the synagogue, suggested that it is better to ask his son because now he's a man, he is of age. Now, in our context, what's the big deal of being excommunicated? What is the big deal of being put out of the synagogue? After all, if ARPC kicks you, you come back to Living Praise. If Living Praise kicks you, you go to Zion BP. And at Adam, if True Jesus just kicks you, you go to Trinity. After Trinity, you come to Adam. That's what Mona did. Mona was from Trinity, you know that. Yeah, you can sell, that one you can sell. You know. No, don't record. And as though it doesn't affect, no fear of your economic, social, and even your spiritual life being affected. But in the Romantic era, not that everyone is in romance, but in Roman time, when the Roman church wielded spiritual oversight, there is this decree called the interdict. What interdict means is that if you were excommunicated by the church, you are in a sense separated from God. And so the fear is that when you die, you go to hell. And this is a very powerful restrainer for people to toe the line. At least until Martin Luther, he stood against the very powerful Roman church. And so we understand why the parents were fearful to be put out of the synagogue. We must also know that believers who claim this Jesus as Christ would also risk facing that kind of situation. To this, they interrogate the man again. This time, the Pharisees call upon the divine name of God in the hope of implicating Jesus by the man's answer. Instead, what they got was more than what they asked for. And that healed man said, I have told you already, and you did not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Now, it seems to suggest of the man that by asking again, do you want to be his disciples, was his remark to the Pharisees. Now, clearly, the Pharisees' feathers were ruffled, and they defended that they are disciples of Moses. And for this fellow, we don't even know where he comes from. And immovable by the most amazing thing that happened in this healed man, he testified that God doesn't listen to sinners. And I am blind, but now I see, showed that Jesus is the man from God, who does the will of God, and hence is not a sinner. Otherwise, Jesus could do nothing. And so the healed man response just showed how blind the Pharisees were to their self-righteous and to their self-affirmations. First, the healed man questioned the validity of the Pharisees' evaluation of Jesus. He argued from his own experience, Jesus had opened his eyes, This was a miracle. Now, no one had ever heard of a man who had been born blind receiving his sight. How could they dismiss someone who could do such a miracle as an unknown? Second, he stated a universal belief, at least for the Jews, right? Both the healed man and the Pharisees shared the belief that God does not listen to sinners. He listens to the godly man who does his will. And third, he drew a logical conclusion in that on the basis of this belief, he argued that if this man were not from God, he could do nothing. And God had obviously listened to Jesus by enabling him to do something really extraordinary. The healing was proof that Jesus was from God. That was the last straw that broke the camel's back, that the Pharisees can take of this man. And so they threw him out. Their very act suggests that though they were sighted, yet they were so blinded by their plot, by their intent to kill Jesus, whom incidentally threatens their position and their power. So we moved on. Healed man believed. And you notice that Jesus initiates healing the blind man from the earlier verses without request, right? Same here also. Jesus found a man again. Seems like everywhere turn now Jesus is around, no? The least expected. But the man had never seen Jesus because he had been blind then when they met. Thus, he did not recognize Jesus immediately, even though he could now see. And so Jesus meeting the healed man was watched by also some Pharisees. So Jesus also gave that challenge to the Jews by way of question. Do you believe in the Son of Man? In reply, the healed man tells Jesus to tell him that he could, so that he could believe the Son of Man. And this Son of Man is a title familiar to the Jews, which comes from Daniel chapter 7, 13, where one like the Son of Man comes with authority and is worshipped by every nation. So Jesus admitted that he is that person whom the healed man is seeing and hearing from, face to face, a revelation. To that statement, the healed man believed. The man must be so relieved and extremely comforted, although he was put out of the place of worship. Here, face to face, he meets both the object and the subject of worship. So it is evident of his faith as he progressively refers Jesus as, to begin with, the man they called Jesus, later as a prophet, and finally as Lord, the object and subject of worship. So following Jesus says, "For judgment I've come into this world, so that the blind will see, and those who see will become blind." Now the verb "have come" focuses on the continuing effects of Jesus' coming. His coming to earth from heaven was restoring sight to the blind, but it was also to highlight the blindness of those who have sight. In saying this, Jesus was relating the physical and spiritual realms. The man who had been physically blind was now a believer, meaning that his spiritual eyes had been open. He contrasted this man with the Pharisees. Their physical eyes had functioned normally since birth. They were proud of this, for it proved that they were not steeped in sin at birth, as they had taunted the healed man with being a sinner. However, their physical normality gave them a false sense of security and self-righteousness that led them to resist Jesus' ministry. Although they could see physically, they were still spiritually blind. They could not see that the ordinary man Jesus was also the extraordinary Savior, the Light, the Christ. But some of the Pharisees who hung around and upon hearing what Jesus said about the sighted becoming blind raised a rhetoric question to which Jesus retorted that if you were blind, you would have seen the need to believe in Jesus, the Light. So believing in Jesus would have rendered them not guilty from sin. However, the fact that the Pharisees' stubborn claim to be able to see kept them from coming to Jesus, who is the light of the world. Because they did not come to him, their guilt remained. So allow me to draw a few applications by way of reflection from the healing of this blind man. First, now we must note that the man expresses the human conditions prior to meeting Christ, blind from birth. Part of the implication of being born into a fallen world is that we have no natural spiritual perception whom the blind man represents, fallen humanity steeped in darkness of ignorance and sin without hope of salvation. A fact to acknowledge, don't miss the obvious for the other. Second, the man, however, also models the way of salvation, the turning from darkness to light. Now, we note the growth in a healed man's perception. From seeing the man called Jesus to he's the prophet, he opened my eyes, he's from God, and finally to the Lord, I believe, and he worshiped. What it means is faith is a journey towards Jesus to the point of commitment to him as Lord. Meaning to say, if he is Lord, you are not Lord. If he is Lord, your life belongs to him, not yours anymore. And when that happens, you regain your sight. And so how are you growing? People able to see you're growing that way? Something to think about, right? If you have said your belief in Jesus. Third, the man also illustrates the repercussions of coming to believe in Jesus. They may be highly upsetting both, because why? By believing in Jesus, you will have problems even with your family, just like we see in this man, whose parents, out of fear, couldn't stand up for his own son, your own flesh and blood. And this is reality, you know. Now, whom are ministers to? A lot of times, we come from very different religious background. And so for any one of us who wants to believe in Jesus, it's always taunted. And I'm seeing progress made in families. More and more parents are more forgiving, more understanding. But now we're not talking about parents anymore, no? We're talking about relatives. Your dad's brother, your brother's sisters, your mom's brothers, your mom's sisters. It can cause havoc, you know, in your faith. And I see this oftentimes at funerals. You are the son of the one that has passed on. And you find it very difficult as a Christian to decide. You want to have a Christian funeral, but then it's not your parents that says, never mind, even the parents says, I'm okay, but your aunt will be the voice that says, no, you cannot, you must not, because your dad, your mom, your this and that. This is something that we must realize. You're fortunate if we have not gone through this, but that doesn't mean you won't face this problem. So something for us to also take note of. Four, the story expresses division. How so? The coming of Jesus as light, for those who respond to this light is safe. But those who doesn't come to this light, refuse to come to this light, they are judged. Stubbornly clinging to the light that they claim is already in them. They go out into darkness in which no light will ever shine. Meaning, is there an urgency for us to share the gospel? Are you doing that? Are you deliberately doing that because of your faith in Jesus, because you have seen the light, because the light has shined
into the dark recesses of your life. Of your life. And so one way of doing it is will be, next week we'll be celebrating Easter. So you have heard from Pastor Chris, there's two events at least for you to take the opportunity to invite, to prayerfully invite your loved ones who have not known and who have not seen the light yet, as you have seen the light. One is from Wednesday onwards to Friday, that will be the denominational celebration. And then on Sunday, we have our own Easter service over at ACSI. Something to take home and chew at it. And don't just chew, no? You chew, you swallow, your body absorbs. Then you must act on it now, because or not, you become very fat and lazy. That's what happens. So in conclusion, is it possible to claim to see but to be blinded to what is going on in and around us? But since Monday, it is only a fitting tribute that the Straits Times, the media, Twitter, Facebook, whatever media, runs story after story, page after page, eulogy after eulogy of a well-loved and well-respected man, both local and abroad, on Mr. Lee Kuan Yew. Every day, reports by his cabinet ministers, foreign dignitaries, those who serve with him, Singaporeans both young and old, and even opposition party leaders, gave glowing tribute to this great man who built Singapore to be what it is today. And by the way, if you ask, who is Singapore? I think many, even us, who is Singapore? Many will tell you that it is Lee Kuan Yew. Singapore is Lee Kuan Yew, and Lee Kuan Yew is Singapore. And that's how much respect he had garnered over his lifespan of 91 years. Now, it shows of his vision and dedication in building a nation from third to first world. We are all enjoying the fruits of his labor. What would be fundamentally wrong would be to criticize incessantly on a single issue of policies that he has made and he had legislated. What do I mean? If you are a car owner, what would you be your main grouse? COE perhaps? If not COE, then ERP, lah. Because every day you travel on the road, you sure can have ERP on. If you are a dating couple or a young married couple, what is your main grouse? I think it would be the price of housing. It seems to be going out, not coming down. Although there's a lull period now, so you have the money, you better go and buy now. And if you're a student, the education system, because the education system is very harsh, you know. I mean, I'm a father to three daughters. I know how terrible they... For those parents, you will know. Actually, the main grounds is not so much the students, but the parents. Now, as compared to what the late Mr. Lee Kuan Yew has achieved, don't you think that it would be myopic, or given our aging population to be presbyopic, not that they are Presbyterians, for us not to see the greater good for all than our selfish aggrandizement? Now, like the Pharisees, and we are oftentimes like the Pharisees also, agree? Sighted, yet blinded. And I'm thankful that in my younger days, I had the opportunity to go to a few places, not on holiday but work. Enough for me to conclude this. There's nothing quite like Singapore. There's nothing quite like the peace you and I enjoy. I vividly remember during the racial riots. Riots, huh? I vividly remembered, I was young then, And it scarred me until now that I can vividly remember. If you want to see a tank, where do you go? To the open house, SAF open house, right? Now, back then, when there was a racial riot, all of a sudden I saw a tank parked right outside my house. Because where we were staying, by the way, that road is Tembing Road, and Lee Kuan Yew stayed in Tembing Road. Got affinity, one, no? And he studied in Chung Guan, which is actually the Chinese Mandarin School of Presbyterian Boys' School. You know that? Same compound we shared. But he's older than me, lah. But anyway, you don't want to be in that situation where you live in fear. You cannot go out, there's curfew. Really, my house was like a house where, because my dad helps a lot of the poorer folks, the hawkers to get their license, criminals to get pardon. And so out of their responding and reciprocating to his kindness, and because of the, and most of them are gangsters, they belong to gangs. So my house became an armament cache, you know. You have parangs, you have all those weapons hiding in my house. And that's how fearful we lived. And that's why until today I can vividly remember. And so really we have enjoyed nothing quite like the peace we enjoy in Singapore. Even if all other things I only can aspire to achieve, it is this peace that holds my heart back from wandering elsewhere, for setting my sights elsewhere. For those who travel to different cities, I think you can agree with me. Now, having said all that, what Lee Kuan Yew have said and have done and has achieved for us, it would be disrespectful, even if there are differences of views, not to salute our late Mr. Lee Kuan Yew's many great and grand achievements for the nation of Singapore. But it would be dire to miss the obvious for the other, not to believe what Jesus Christ has done for humanity, bringing light into the world so that the world, you and I, can be saved from the darkness of self-righteous and self-affirmation and can live selfless and self-giving lives for His glory. This would be our right and reverent response to Jesus, our light, our hope. Amen.